Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com. And then do you get time with, like, Oz the Mentalist? Will you be able to, like, talk to the guy?
I'm kind of wanting to avoid him. He kind of scares me a little bit, to be honest with you.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here are your hosts, Eric Bilstad and Vince Vitrano.
Ten on Wisconsin's Morning News, but late afternoon in the Middle East, where we've been saying and talks between the U.S. and Iran could begin today. At this point, I don't know how that's possible as we bring in CBS White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi. Morning, Olivia.
Hey, good morning.
So we're watching this morning, and it looked like, as of just a few hours ago, maybe that's changed, but Vice President J.D. Vance, who's supposed to be leading the U.S. delegation in these latest rounds of negotiations, had yet to leave Washington. So I think today is tomorrow at best in terms of when folks might be back at the table.
Yeah, all of this is a bit confusing. Let's take it back to Sunday morning. President Trump on Truth Social, lengthy Truth Social post that said he would be sending representatives back to the region. They would be there tomorrow evening. That was signposted for Monday evening. Monday evening came and went, and no U.S. officials were on their way to Pakistan. We are now well into Tuesday morning here on the East Coast, 10, 11 a.m., and no sign yet that the vice president is on his way. And this is something that, you know, the White House press would be privy to. They would tell us whether or not he's wheels up, and usually they take some journalists so we would know. But in this case, yeah, the vice president is, by all indications, still in Washington. We don't know about the president's special envoy or his son-in-law, but the VP, who is supposed to be the heavy hitter on this negotiation, has not left yet, and time is running out. We also don't know, and we've been asking the White House for clarity, when does the ceasefire end? Because our understanding was Tuesday at 6 p.m., which was when the ceasefire was announced, and it was a two-week ceasefire, is when the ceasefire would expire. President Trump now says that would be on Wednesday evening. So giving them a little bit more time, which is different than what it was last time. Remember, the president was saying Tuesday at 6 p.m., Tuesday at 6 p.m., it's bridge and power plant day if they don't come to an agreement. They're not willing at this moment to say what their red line is. So that's also notable there. Everything is happening behind with shrouded secrecy right now. And the word that White House officials keep telling me is fluid. Everything is fluid right now, meaning the Iranians have not agreed to come to the table in Pakistan. At first on Sunday, there was a flat out no, we won't be there. There have been some indications behind the scenes that they might be willing to show up, but still, I think they're waiting here for just a firm confirmation that the Iranians are going to be there, because it would be embarrassing if the vice president showed up in Pakistan and there were no Iranians to talk to.
And sat at the table by himself, right, Tim?
Yeah.
Bad look.
And Witkoff and Kushner sitting at the table and the Iranians are not there. I'm curious if you are hearing anything. Is there some sort of sticking point with the vice president leading the delegation? Do the Iranians have some sort of particular problem with him personally, as far as how things went last time, because there was some capitulation, or at least not a firm commitment on the part of the president, even into late last week, that it would be VP Vance leading this latest round?
It is a good question. You know, from at least what we heard from some of our sources who have Iranian reporting, the Iranians are actually okay negotiating with J.D. Vance. If anything, they see that as a bit of a stronger negotiation because there's continuity there. Mm-hmm. He would be the next, you know, president if he were to win the election. So any deal that were made under this administration, they would feel confident in because it was negotiated with the deputy, the number two in this country. So from their side, they're okay with J.D. Vance. But you're right. President Trump on Sunday, after he said representatives were going to the region, told multiple news outlets that the vice president would not be leading those negotiations. And then we heard from the White House and they said, actually, he is going to lead this negotiation. So there was a lot of confusion. Then yesterday, President Trump told the New York Post that the vice president was en route on his way to Pakistan. But he wasn't. He had not boarded a plane and he wasn't on his way there. So there is confusion about what the president is saying regarding J.D. Vance in these negotiations. And we've been working on getting some reporting about that as well. But as far as just why there's kind of this delta between the U.S. and Iran on whether the talks are happening at all, what they've actually agreed to. Because remember, the president said on Friday, last Friday, he said they've agreed to everything. They've agreed to handing over their enriched uranium. They've agreed to never build a nuclear weapon. They've agreed to reopen the strait. He said all these things that they agreed to. But the Iranians were actually sitting down with the Pakistanis when the president was saying all that, and it was hurting the negotiations because they said they hadn't agreed to all of that, but the president was telling people that they had. So you're having this diplomacy trying to play out behind the scenes, and everyone's trying to be quiet and trust each other and say, like, where could we work on some things? And then you have both sides, because the Iranians are doing this as well, it's not just the president, you have both sides going out in public and saying things that either one side has agreed to and they haven't, making proclamations about the negotiations that are just not true. So there's a lot of mistrust right now in this space. And it's kind of like, you know, watch what I do, not what I say. Mm-hmm. But it does hurt these negotiations that are trying to happen seemingly in good faith.
Meanwhile, we have the Labor Secretary's situation, Olivia. So now we have our third cabinet official to leave in recent weeks. What are the accusations and what do we know about the Labor Secretary who is now out?
Yeah, so Lori Chavez de Remmer, she was someone who, when she was even picked to the role, you know, some on the right were skeptical of her because she's a little bit more of a moderate Republican. She's from the West Coast. She's from Oregon. And she's seen as very friendly to the labor unions. President Trump was able to kind of, you know, dig into the labor union support of Democrats during the 2024 election. So, you know, he picked this labor secretary who was friendly with them, but came with, you know, seemingly a host of just investigative issues when she started in the role. The New York Post had an investigation and revealed it back in January that she was misusing alcohol on the job. She was taking trips that were framed as work trips, but actually were personal trips. You know, we were not able to get more details about that investigation, but then we were able to confirm that there were issues with her husband and her staff, that at one point her husband was prevented from going into the federal workforce building in Washington because of allegations against him from members of the staff. So it was becoming a bit of a distraction from this White House, and there were more reports that were coming. Late yesterday, she decided to leave her post as labor secretary. They said she would be going to the private sector, and as a result, her undersecretary, Keith Sonderling, would now be the acting labor secretary for the U.S. But you're right. In the past month, that month or so, you know, early March, we've had three cabinet secretaries leave their Senate-confirmed posts in Trump's cabinet. All three were women. Two of them, Kristi Noem and Lori Chavez de Remmer, left because of accusations of misuse of funds, a loss of confidence from this president, and Attorney General Pam Bondi, who's the other one, was removed from her position even after she allegedly asked the president if she could stay on until June because he was upset by her handling of the Epstein files. Her lack of investigations into the president's perceived political enemies. And so she got removed and replaced with her deputy. So there's two acting members of this cabinet right now, one confirmed after they switched out the DHS secretary. So, you know, it's not unfounded for there to be turnover in the president's cabinet. We remember his first term very clearly, but this is happening very quickly right now.
I'm so confused by this, Olivia. Olivia Rinaldi is with us. She's a CBS News White House reporter. Because the president is a guy who's coming from private business who would never have tolerated someone on the company dime wasting a whole bunch of money, taking personal trips, some of the other shenanigans that are alleged to have been happening within his own cabinet. Yet this isn't a one-off. You got Kash Patel now, FBI director, facing his own slew of accusations.
Pete Hegseth.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows you where the president is focused on, which is, you know, this war is taking up a lot of their time, where perhaps previously he may have been hyper-focused on the internal politics of the cabinet, as we saw play out during the first Trump administration. I think now just, you know, his attention is elsewhere. And also, the president is someone who, when he has personal relations with these people, personal relationships with these people, and he just likes them personally, he's much less willing to, you know, let them go. I think that's kind of the thing with Kash Patel, is over and over again, we've heard from this White House that the president still has confidence in him. And he has tons of confidence in Pete Hegseth. He really likes Pete Hegseth, as do other members of the administration. So, you know, you got to think about it from just that personal aspect, where Trump hears the noise from the news and goes, well, I like him.
Well, I thought Susie Wiles was supposed to take care of all that, right? His chief of staff was going to be, you know what, we are not doing the clown car this time around. We're going to build a serious administration and count on me, Mr. President, to make sure that happens. But hadn't heard from her in a bit either.
She's been fighting cancer.
Yeah, she's undergoing treatments. We saw her Saturday at the White House when we were in the Oval for this announcement from the president. She was there. She's looking well. She's looking good. But yeah, she is fighting cancer treatments right now. And, you know, there's just a lot on their table at the moment. We also have the midterms coming up. We got redistricting conversations happening throughout the country. There's just a ton they're focused on. And so sometimes when these personal issues bubble up, it's just kind of like the reaction we get is like, oh God, like one more thing we have to deal with.
Right. Yes. And well, and now
the most serious question we have to ask you, Olivia, what are you wearing at the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Have you figured that out yet?
I have not figured that out yet. I need to get on that. That's actually on my to-do list today, is trying to figure out what I should wear to that.
Are you bringing fiance? Do you bring a date?
I am bringing him to a couple of things throughout the weekend. Yes, he is excited. So.
And then do you get time with like Oz the Mentalist? Will you be able to like talk to the guy?
I'm kind of wanting to avoid him. He kind of scares me a little bit, to be honest with you. I saw a clip from him last night where he was on with a comedian, and he was able to by name pick out someone the comedian played basketball with once when he was like in elementary school.
Yeah.
And I just, there's something about that I want to stay far away from.
Amazing. Well, we can't wait for a full report coming up next week.
Yes, absolutely.
Olivia Rinaldi with us, CBS News White House reporter. Thanks, Olivia.
Thank you.
9:22 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Coming up on 9:25 here on Wisconsin's Morning News. Had an interesting chat with Storm Team 4 Chief Meteorologist Brian Nisnansky just about all of these severe weather warnings that we pumped, of course, during Severe Weather Awareness Week. And many of them were tornado warnings.
How many were there? 90, something like that?
90 tornado warnings across the state on that single Friday, where we were in the bullseye of severe weather, and it was widely expected that we would get tornadoes touching down in Wisconsin. I think in our area it was somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen confirmed touchdowns. So you definitely had the prediction of severe weather, which we got. You had the prediction of tornadoes, which we got. But this sort of newer thing, as technology has advanced and allowed for it, when we were kids, what did tornado warning mean to you?
There's a twister on the ground.
On the ground. Somebody's seen it and called the sheriff's office or whatever.
Yeah, or a sheriff's deputy spotted it or
yes.
Something like that.
So you popped a warning when it was confirmed that there was a tornado on the ground. Now, somewhere in there over the last any number of years, National Weather Service has, with the advance in technology, been able to see rotation in the clouds and been able to see when a tornado may not yet have dropped out of the sky, but might. And so that now, don't quote me on the exact specifics, but that now more drives their criteria for calling a tornado warning. So it is different. The parameters have changed. But what concerns me about that is, if you're always popping these tornado warnings, and while it's a good outcome, in many cases, they don't actually produce a tornado that comes and destroys your neighborhood. Are we going to become, is it going to be a cry wolf sort of scenario? Where if it's always a tornado warning, but the tornado never seems to come.
You may have even noticed that on Friday. Yeah. This past Friday, you may have felt less inclined.
Yes.
Because it had been all week long. Like, okay, well.
I guess, yeah. Right. So do you not seek the shelter when you need to, when you actually need to? So we talked to Niz a little about that changing criteria and how he interprets it when he's on the air.
There definitely is an increase in the amount of warnings that are issued. I wouldn't say necessarily it's not as cut and dry as moving the goalpost for the Weather Service. Mm-hmm. Well, one, in general, they are, you know, erring on the side of caution and being more safe than sorry. And in most cases, I believe that. But where you're going is then when the real deal is happening, people don't take it as seriously. And that is a concern, and that is a thought, and that is something that they weigh as well. Now, one of the biggest things they've done with tornado warnings is you have a situation that sets up that we had last week called a QLCS squall line that moves through. It's a fancy word, quasi-linear convective system. And basically, when you know you have the ingredients for that to set up, as basic as I could say is if you have a squall line of storms that's movement is perpendicular to the wind, then you get shear to develop. Now, what they've learned with that is instead of waiting for a tornado to pop up with these, they're so hard to predict and they're so brief that usually when they wait for that to happen, it's already too late and the tornado has already formed and it is pointless. So what they're doing now is being more proactive of finding the ingredients and then determining we got an issue of warning because this could happen. However, then that just sums it up. This could happen versus this is happening, which is what tornado warnings really should be. So it's really a tough line, if that all makes sense.
Well, it means that seeing Niz Nansky there or any of the meteorologists when you're watching along on TV or listening to Copleen here on WTMJ, we rely even more now on their expertise and interpretation. So Niz, I don't know if you remember watching any of the nights, you know, he'd be, okay, here's the tornado warning in southern Milwaukee County. This is why they issued it. This is what I'm seeing here. This is what I'm seeing actually happening. Once in a while, you'll hear him say, I don't like this. I don't like this right here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's opposing colors, and he's explaining
it. It appears like it's going to start to rotate a certain way or whatever.
This looks to me like that's a debris signature. I don't like this. Copleen will do the same sort of thing. So more and more, we need to count on them to interpret a little bit further what these warnings are. So that was an interesting
explanation. Should also point out that a lot of the warnings these days are very specific to a region. Like, it might be Dodge County, but it's the southern tip of Dodge County, so folks up north don't have to consider it as much, right? Like, they've found ways to compartmentalize.
More specific.
Yeah, which is helpful.
Coming up on 9:30 here on Wisconsin's Morning News. 9:39 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Just want to get on record here on this Ridgeland Farms thing. You are seeing and hearing a very well-funded and well-coordinated PR campaign from the activists who attempted a break-in once again at this Beagle facility out in Dane County. And I'm not suggesting they don't have a right to do that or to have that messaging, but I don't want that to be the only message you hear. And without regard for how you feel about testing on animals, about the conditions at this particular facility or any of those things. Let's not have that debate, but let's just bring it back to what occurred over the weekend and what the activists are now complaining about. They tried to illegally break into a business. So again, I'm asking you to remove from the conversation how you feel about the business. Okay. But it is a legally operating business in Dane County. They tipped their hand and said, we're going to break in again. We're going to cause damage to property. We're going to trespass and we're going to steal things. And the sheriff's office showed up to try to prevent that from happening. And they're very bent out of shape at being told that they shouldn't do that. And the one guy is now, is this the head of the organization?
No, this is Scott Wagner.
Okay. What does Scott say?
All of us have extensive training in nonviolence. And, you know, if you see some of the video, a lot of it was just, you know, just casually pepper spraying people who are holding up flowers. I mean, a lot of these people, anybody would think were just hippies.
Man, I'm having trouble with that statement there. Because while some people were there holding up flowers, other people were cutting a hole in the fence. Other people were trying to ram through the front gates, already causing damage. And authorities were outnumbered and trying to protect this lawfully operating business. So I don't know what you expected to happen. The other guy suggested, well, we're nonviolent, and they didn't have to use force. They could have just said you're being detained. Weren't they saying you can't do this?
I mean, it's
like, stop.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that nothing is black and white. First of all, there are a million shades of gray, and it's not us against them. You're talking about sheriff's deputies and law enforcement that are called in to do a job. They're not doing what they're doing because they're either protecting the dogs or think the dogs should be hurt or anything like that. They're being called in there to protect the law from being broken, right?
Now, they were in the Capitol protesting. All for that. Go ahead and hoot and holler and tell the governor he needs to do this and that, and that's their latest. Okay, that's America, man. That's democracy. You don't like what's going on here? You want to see the law changed? Great. And there are procedures and ways that you can go about that while still being lawful. In this case, I think they got exactly what they hoped they would get. And again, it's a very well-coordinated campaign. They have every right to do that, to put their message out.
And there are
out,
legitimate questions about what's going on, too.
Sure.
Don't hear
enough.
The... Yeah. If you were advising the governor... Because the governor's office, they're demanding that the governor address the concerns at Ridgeland Farms. What do you tell the governor to say or not to say? Do you say, hey, sir, let this kind of just blow over, let the law or future law take place?
Follow-up question before I advise the governor. Are you serious about actually wanting to do anything, or do you just want to make this go away? Those are two different things.
Okay.
And I might advise differently depending on whether you think – hey, let's work something out, or do you want it to just go away?
I would assume, and this is the skepticism in me, I would assume that most, I don't know what's in Governor Evers' brain, but I think that most politicians, lawmakers, kind of just want things to go away.
Yeah, right. You know, I would suggest, you folks have your issue. I'll meet behind closed doors with whoever your leadership or a group of you. And let's talk about this if you want to do something. I will meet with you. You've earned a meeting. Okay,
yep,
you
yep.
have my attention. Good. Or whatever. I assume that probably wouldn't be good enough for them. But honestly, sort of it's more of a call your bluff. Are you just trying to get attention here and get on the news and all of that? Or do you want to try to work through something? I guess either way, I would suggest I will meet with you. Okay, but it's going to be a few of you, and I need something from you. I need you to stop breaking the law out there at this farm. I'll hear what you have to say. We'll start talking about it. I'll look into whether there are violations and whether I agree with your point of view. I'll take that meeting, but you got to stop breaking the law. I need you to stand down on that.
Hmm.
And then we'll see what happens.
No, we'll see if that's what they go with.
No, I don't know what's going to happen here. But either way, I just want
to... It is a conundrum. It is a fascinating back and forth again. And it totally can see people upset with the fact that if these dogs are being treated poorly, you know, they understand that, but got to understand, law enforcement has to do what law enforcement has to do.
It is 9:44 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Burkhardt Sporting Goods in New Berlin is the baseball lover's destination. With a massive state-of-the-art indoor training facility featuring hit tracks with precision analytics, a huge open turf area, and all the best training equipment you need. So get in here and get ready to get better. And we'll help you with this special offer. Buy 20 batting cage credits for $30. That's 25% off. This is Brian Burkhardt, and if you love baseball and softball like we do,
you can't beat Burkhardt.
153rd and National. If you plan on draining buzzer beaters, the place to start is Burkhardt, where you'll find a great selection of residential basketball hoops from the best brand, Goalrilla. We'll handle the installation and take care of everything to make it easy from start to finish. And right now, when you buy from Burkhardt, standard hoop installation is half price. You can't beat that. This is Brian Burkhardt, and when you love basketball like we do,
you can't beat Burkhardt.
Vince Vitrano for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. What if you had the screens that would disappear when you weren't using them? That's the Pella 250 series vinyl window with the accordion hidden screen. Gives you a clearer view, 44% more light than your conventional screens. So the screen is there when your window's open, lets you let in the fresh air. But then it tucks away when you're not using it. That gives you a view that is clear. It's beautiful, practical, and even easier to make, to clean your windows then when you have that thing rolled away. So right now, you know, window and door projects can improve the comfort, boost energy efficiency, upgrade your home's overall style. And when you're working with Pella, you've got expert recommendations that are designed around your home, your needs, and the way you want to live. They guide you through every step of the way, helping you choose all of the right options for your home, your style, and budget. And if you've been putting off replacing your windows and doors, now's the time. As Pella of Wisconsin is offering 0% interest financing all the way until 2030. 0% interest until 2030. Certain restrictions do apply. Offer ends at the end of the month. Get started at PellaWI.com. .46 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Maybe you're scrolling right now on the phone, or you're watching us on the YouTube stream there on the phone. If you have a smartphone, odds are it's an iPhone. At least 58% of smartphone users in the U.S. own that signature Apple product.
Just 10 years ago, we launched the original iPod here, and it went on to revolutionize the way we listen to music. And just 1 year ago, we launched the new MacBook Air, which has fundamentally changed the way people think about notebook computers. Today, we'll remind you of the uniqueness of this company.
That is Apple CEO Tim Cook, at least for now. Decade and a half ago, at his first product launch in the post-Steve Jobs era, Apple announced this week that Cook is stepping down. That'll happen later this year. And new guy John Ternus will be taking the reins of the $4 trillion company. We talked with ABC News technology reporter Mike Dubosky about Tim Cook's legacy and what's next.
It's one of unprecedented growth, I think it's fair to say. During Cook's tenure, Apple has grown its market capitalization from just under $350 million to today, as you just said, over $4 trillion. In fact, for a brief period of time last year, it was a $5 trillion right. company. Cook oversaw every iPhone release since the iPhone 4S when he took over the company in 2011, obviously taking over from Steve Jobs, who founded Apple. He also had his own projects later, right? The iPhone was conceived under Jobs. Things like the Apple Watch, AirPods, the Mac's transition from Intel processors to Apple's own silicon, right? Their own internally developed processors, all are Cook projects and helped to create this company that grew really significantly over the last almost 15 years. Another really important part of Cook's legacy, I think, is Apple's move into the services world. I think Cook correctly saw many years ago now that people weren't going to shell out $1,000 for an iPhone every year, right? We used to be on the cadence of buying a new smartphone every year, maybe every 2 years. Now we know that that sort of length of time has lengthened, right? Has gone to 3 years, maybe 5 years. That means Apple needed a more durable revenue stream. So they went into things like Apple Pay, which is a payments platform, Apple TV, a subscription TV service, things like Apple Music, which kind of took over iTunes. Also, the kind of outgrowth of things like Apple Maps all are kind of Cook projects. So, you know, he had these, you know, variety of different ideas. I think the legacy related to more modern technologies, things like artificial intelligence, are yet to be seen. But certainly, you know, you can't sneeze at $4 trillion under your tenure. That is a pretty significant accomplishment.
Mike Dubosky is with us. He's ABC News technology reporter. So I guess for the new guy, Mike, what I'm looking for, and actually you reminded me of any number of things under the Cook tenure there that maybe I had forgotten were his. But I feel like lately we haven't gotten the next big thing. What is the next thing that changes everything, like the iPod or like the iPhone?
Well, I think it's also important to remember that Apple is rarely the first to a market, right? And that is something yes, that was popularized under Steve Jobs, right? they were not the first to make an MP3 player, but they made the iPod. They were not the first to make a smartphone, but they made the iPhone. And you can apply that to the Mac, and you can apply that to the Apple Watch, and so on and so forth. Apple did try to get into a new market SKU a few years ago under Tim Cook. It was the Apple Vision Pro. It's the big $3,500, you know, kind of VR headset that you can strap to your face. Didn't really take off, but also, you know, if you listen to sort of Apple insiders, was never really meant to be the next big thing. It was kind of, they were trying something new, maybe seeing if there's any public reaction to it. It does not seem like there was a huge public reaction to it, so it's sort of unclear what the future of that project is. It is significant that John Ternus is Apple's current head of hardware, right? He started in 2001 at this company working on a display for Apple, a monitor called Apple Cinema Display. He rose through the ranks of the company. He became head of hardware engineering in 2013 and was one of the big kind of leading voices on the AirPods project, which has been a huge success for Apple. AirPods, we kind of underrate in terms of just how important they are to Apple's brand portfolio. We talk a lot about how if you buy an iPhone, well, it kind of makes sense to buy a pair of earbuds to go along with them, right? Well, that's what the AirPods are there for. And if you already have two Apple products, well, you might as well get a Mac as well. This is part of
the
reason.
Family, right?
Right. It's part of their ecosystem, or what is often called the walled garden of Apple, where it's like you buy all these products so they work nicely together, and then it makes it really difficult to leave, right? The wall becomes higher with each new thing, and the AirPods are a big part of that because they are comparatively cheap in this way. So, yeah, I think he's going to have an interesting road ahead of him. What do you do with the AI stuff? What do you do with projects like the Vision Pro? How do you negotiate a changing kind of global supply chain world, especially with regards to tariffs? Those are the questions that are in front of John Ternus right now.
That's Mike Dubusky, ABC News technology reporter, who chatted with us on the future of Apple.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
9:55 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Sports note, Brewers have a couple of early starts because we're on Eastern Time in Detroit. So it's a 5:40 tonight. It's a 5:40 on Wednesday night, 5:40 our time for first pitch. So that means our pregame show is going to start just after the 5 o'clock news.
Speaking of the Brewers, they're back home this weekend. You know how they have their ticket situation now when you park? You just drive in.
Yep.
And you scan the QR code and put in your license plate.
Yep.
Starting today, the zoo is doing that. So no more driving in that line, sometimes waiting depending on the day, especially on a weekend, and talking to the person in the kiosk or in the little booth there. Instead, you're driving through and you're parking with the QR code, and then you're paying for tickets if you don't have a zoo pass when you walk into the main gate area. There's a little kiosk there to buy your tickets.
So often when we have these innovations, it's sold to us as, this will make it easier for you, but really it's just a streamlining measure.
It's easier for them.
Right. But this is one I would suggest.
Agreed.
Whether it's American Family Field or very many parking facilities, surface parking, what have you, just scan the code. I would suggest that generally speaking, I think people who've figured out how to do it think it moves things along and it's pretty convenient.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. I think it definitely can alleviate some of the traffic issues that you've run into in some of those spots as cars are slowly getting in because they got to pay for the stuff.
Man, I remember as a kid, we lived not that far from the zoo there in Tosa. I mean, close enough that we could hear the zoo train whistle. It was the sound of summer. If you could hear that over the Indy cars over
Yeah, I was going to say, did you hear the cars
at
too?
The mile. But yeah, there were those days where it was cuckoo town, where it was beautiful weather. And that line went all the way down.
So they're looking to fix that. So that's nice. Good thought.
Coming up on 9:58, Blue Point taken next here on News Radio 620 WTMJ.
Watching the birds when it jumped on me, and it just kind of felt something sharp on my shoulder and shook it off, and then just laser focused on the turkeys, not really focused on the cat, I guess.